Kiawonju. This is Breakfast with Mark Patrick on 100.9 FM and digital Noongar Radio.
13 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock now on Noongar Radio. Thursday, June the 23rd, 2022. And in the studio, I've got Shelley Cable. And she's a Noongar woman working for the Mindaroo Foundation. Good morning, Shelley, and welcome to Noongar Radio.
Kaya, Mark. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself first before we get into it.
Yeah, sure. So, Kaya, I'm Shelley. I'm a Wilman Noongar. I've been born and raised in Perth my whole life, but my family, the Cable family, come from Narrogin, about 200 k's inland from Perth.
Cool. Okay. So, tell us about, how did you even get involved with the Mindaroo Foundation and Generation One?
Yeah, it's an interesting story, actually, because...
And I know you were a Miss NAIDOC.
I was. The last time I was here in this studio was in 2016 as Miss NAIDOC for Perth, which was such an incredible honour and just changed the life course for me completely.
Awesome.
But for me, you know, I've always been passionate about economic opportunity and economic empowerment for our people. I'm an accountant by background, so please don't hold that against me. I promise I'm a really interesting
I always hold it against accountants and lawyers. I'm like that.
But I guess I've always been interested in, you know, economic opportunities. And my first introduction to Generation One was back in 2015. They had a program called CEO for a Day, and there were a few winners. I was one of them who got to take part in that program, and I got to shadow the CEO of the Commonwealth Bank for a day.
Oh, wow.
That program was actually run by Generation One, and it's just such a huge coincidence that 5 years later I ended up becoming being appointed as the CEO of Generation One itself.
Amazing. So you would have been following yourself around if you were the CEO.
I don't know about that.
Okay, so Mindaroo Foundation,
yeah.
Tell us about what you're doing.
So Mindaroo is Andrew and Nicola Forrest philanthropic organisation. It's quite large these days. We've got over 150 people working across the country and internationally on quite a range of different causes. That's related to people, to planet and to impact. So we have 13 initiatives and I lead one of those 13 initiatives. It's called Generation One. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do is help create employment parity for our mob. So essentially try and close the Indigenous employment gap in one generation.
Wow, that's a pretty ambitious thing to be attempting.
Yeah, it is.
And what is the Indigenous employment gap?
It's big and it's hardly closing, which is what really has us the most concerned. So the gap, the honest answer is we don't know how big the gap is. That's something that we're trying to solve at Generation One, but it's mad to me that today in 2022, we don't actually know how many Indigenous Australians are in work. Full stop. And we haven't known how many were in work since 2016. So it's a really strange space to be working in, trying to solve a gap and trying to close a gap that you don't actually know how big it is.
Wow. Wow. What about census data? Oh, that's not even in yet, is it? We're still waiting for that, aren't we?
We are still waiting for that. So we all did it back in August last year. We're hoping the workforce results will come out in October, but yes, we're still waiting.
Oh, wow. Okay, so then you'll have maybe some idea of how many Indigenous people are employed.
That's right. So we should have a pretty good number. Obviously, not all of our mob complete the census, so there's still a few gaps in that as well. But really, what we think we know is in between 2008 and 2018, so 10 years, the Indigenous employment gap, it was 27%. It closed to 26% in 10 years. So at this rate, we're trying to... we don't want to wait.
What, 100 years
we're
or something?
We're looking at worse. It's 200 years at
good
this rate
grief.
To close the employment gap.
Okay, so the Indigenous Employment Index is, how does that happen?
Yeah.
Well, you know, like, do they, what do they ask?
Yeah, so the Indigenous Employment Index has been certainly my biggest project to lead at Generation One so far. It's taken about 2 years and we've just released it. We partnered with the Bankwest Curtin Economic Centre here in Perth, Curtin Uni, and a fantastic Aboriginal business based out of Queensland called Murrowin Consulting. And essentially what we did is we wanted to try and close this data gap amongst some of Australia's biggest employers. So we wanted to find out from them, how many Indigenous Australians do you employ? Where are they throughout your organisation? position? Are they just at entry-level roles, for example, or are they all the way through the organisation to board and executive levels? What's the safety experience of our mob in workplaces today? And effectively, we worked with 42 companies across Australia. Between them, they cover 5% of the Australian workforce, and we asked them a ton of questions. We interviewed a ton of their staff, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous, and that's what comprised the Indigenous Employment Index.
Wow. Okay. So, and that told you what?
It told us there was a long way to go, unfortunately. Yeah. I mean, it was great to have 42 employers take part because it was completely voluntary. You know, they didn't have to participate and open up, you know, their policies and their data to show to share that with us. So the fact that they were open to learning about what worked well in their organisations and what didn't was really encouraging. The high-level results is, as you'll know, and many of the listeners today will know, for parity, we're expecting or we're looking for around 3.3% of any workforce should be Indigenous.
What does that mean, parity?
So parity essentially means that we're represented in workforces in the same proportion that we're reflected in the national population.
Right.
So because we're approximately, it'll change with the census, but approximately for now 3.3% of the national population, we should be expecting to see similar representation in workforces. What we found is that across the 42 employers, there was an average of 2.2% Indigenous employment.
So they're about 1.1%.
That's right.
Down.
That's right.
That's like a third.
That's right. Bingo. So it's it was, to be honest with you, Mark, it was better than what I was expecting to find when I went through. Just knowing how big the Indigenous employment gap is, I was expecting worse. But at the same time, yes, you're completely right. There's a long way to go before we get to 3.3%. But also the employers who took part, they voluntarily participated in this, which indicates to me that they have a commitment already to reconciliation. So they're actually probably above the Australian average.
That's the ones that wanted to participate.
That's right.
How many didn't?
Good question. We did approach around 80 to get the 42 who took part.
So you got a 50% response rate.
That's right. So, I mean, look, we also approached them in the middle of COVID impacting their businesses. So if you take examples of airline organisations, if you take a look at health organisations, they were completely overwhelmed and trying to keep their heads above water. So I think there was those external influences at play as well. But we will be coming back to do Index 2.0 in around 2 years' time, and we hope to grow that number.
Okay. Well, that's fair. That's fair. So what do you think employers should be doing in order to attract and retain First Nations people?
Oh, there's so many things that they can do. What I would recommend, if there's any employers listening, is to visit indigenousemploymentindex.org. You can see the full report. There is literally over 100 things that employers can do to boost Indigenous employment.
What's that address again?
indigenousemploymentindex.org. We've got a pretty comprehensive report. It's close to 200 pages of different things that employers can do. We've been really, really conscious throughout the entire project to make sure that Indigenous experiences and voices were literally all the way through the report. And, you know, for me, even reading it and realising that what I have felt in workplaces before is not unique to me, and actually there are other mob in similar workplaces who feel the same way and feel the same pressures, was really quite reassuring to me.
I'm going to get a little personal now. What sort of things did you experience?
Oh, look, one of the parts of the report that really stood out to me was around cultural load, which is really about the fact that us as Indigenous people, when we go into workplaces, we often have a day job to do. That's part of our job. But there are lots of things that are outside the scope of our job that we're just expected to do because we're Indigenous Australians or because we're Noongars. So some relatable examples might be, well, you have to organise the NAIDOC week morning tea.
Oh, yes.
You've got to call up your uncle to get a welcome to country.
Oh, yes, and you're automatically on the RAP committee.
Bingo. So it was...
you've got to do all the welcomes and acknowledgement to country or whatever.
Exactly right. And these are all things that are not usually part of our actual roles. You know, there's some of our mob who work in Indigenous affairs, and that's fantastic. And mm-hmm. It was really interesting to me to see the wide range of perspectives on this cultural load, because lots of people, me included, are on the side which is, this is additional work. We're already busy with what we have to do.
Yeah, they don't want to pay you for it, do they?
And it's not remunerated in addition. You're just expected to do it to a large extent. That's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum was mob who actively sought out opportunities to educate other people about their culture. And they viewed it as a real privilege, and they went out of their way to find opportunities to do that. So there was definitely a wide range of perspectives on things like that.
Right. Okay. So interesting. I'm really looking forward to see the progress that you guys are going to make. I know that the issues with employment are often overlooked by employers, like how somebody actually manages to come in and do a job interview when they're living out of their car, or even worse, living in an alley or in a tent. Do they can take those sorts of things into consideration? Do they ask those sorts of questions of the person? Like, it could take an effort of 2 weeks to get together the actual clothes to go to a job interview.
Yeah, exactly right, let alone the paperwork that people have to have, or even birth certificates as one example.
Yeah, and lots of jobs require a driver's licence.
Yeah, bingo. So actually one of the things that we found, interestingly but unsurprising, was the incredible role that Indigenous Employment Services play in supporting Indigenous job seekers into work. Hmm. We know, you know, not just through this index research, but just generally speaking, they are so much better than non-Indigenous organisations in supporting our mob into work, just because I think they understand all those additional barriers that our people often have to face.
I think individual people at work in those job areas are understanding, but sometimes the rules that they have to work under are not understanding at all.
As well. Which brings up a whole other topic of conversation around Indigenous employment policy in this country.
We're going to have to get you in here again. We're going to have to get you in here again. Thank you for being on Noongar Radio this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Great to be here. Thank you, Mark.